Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy. It's home of the ambitious upstart. And I got an interview here that's about a guy who sells mushrooms. But frankly, if you focus on the mushrooms, you're going to miss the point of the whole story. Nick Hill Arora is the co-founder of Back to the Roots. By finding his why, meaning his sense of mission, he was able to build a profitable, thriving company that sells, yes, mushroom growing kits and aquafarms. I invited him here to find out what his why is, how it impacts his business, and to see how much of a business you can create by selling mushrooms. And it's all here because of my buddy, Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. When I say he's my buddy, it's not like the two of us go fishing or anything. It's because I've known him for years. He's a great lawyer. And if you're a startup looking for a lawyer who gets your space, I recommend you check out walkercorporatelaw.com or actually just shoot Scott an email, scott@walkercorporatelaw.com. Tell him your situation. Tell him you're looking for a lawyer and start the conversation that way. All right, Nick Hill, I'm going to hit you with the hard question right away.
Alrighty.
How much money, what kind of revenue can you generate selling these mushrooms?
Quite a bit. So we closed last year at $3.3 million in revenue in 2013.
3.3, how old's the business?
Just hit 4 years.
Wow.
So, and we're hitting, expecting a lot more growth this year with them as well. We just launched into Costco, so could be another big, a big milestone for us this year if we can kind of do that launch well.
You know, I should have asked you beforehand, but I kind of assumed you'd have it. Do you have a box with the mushroom? We got to show people. I'm used to you carrying it around.
I do. Let me see here. I don't
What's
have one
going on.
I'll show you what this thing.
I should have asked. I want people to understand what we're talking about.
Itself looks like the mushroom kit. So this is a little closed box right here. You get and you pop up in the front panel, and just in 10 days you get about a pound and a half of fresh oyster mushrooms that pop right out of the box. So you just water twice a day and right in your kitchen window, so you can get mushrooms popping right out of this little box.
There you go. And as the back of the box that you set me up with shows, you can just chop them up and put them in your fajita. We're talking about stuff you can cook. This isn't just decoration or for fun, right?
That's right. Yeah, they're fresh oyster mushrooms. Actually, really, really delicious. Kind of in stores, they go for $13 to $15 a pound, and you can kind of grow them right there just at your own windowsill. I think that's what got us so excited about it, because it's so quick, like in 10 days. And when we came in this knowing nothing about how to grow mushrooms or any kind of their food, and we were just amazed, like, whoa, this thing grows that fast. I think our goal with the box is like packaging up that same sense of wonderment and just being able to offer to more people.
Oh, that's great. Let's see where I want to start off with. I guess the first thing that anyone listening to this is going to be curious about is, how'd you come up with the idea to do this? And the answer came up with a class. It came to you in a class. What was the class?
Right. It was a business ethics class, actually. And we were both, Alex, the other co-founder, and I were undergrads at Cal. Both, I was a business poli-sci double major. He was a business education double major, no background in anything to do with food. And it was our last semester in this business ethics class. And the professor was talking about different sustainability topics. He's like, oh, I've been read somewhere you can grow mushrooms on coffee grounds. And it was about 150-person class. And for some reason, the both of us didn't know each other at the time. We both heard that one sentence, got inspired by it, reached out to him after class, like shot him an email and asked him for more information. And he was like, honestly, I have no idea. This other kid asked about that too. You guys should link up. And we both met up and just hit it off and started kicking around some ideas.
What was it about that got you so excited?
You know, I think it was, so we both, like looking back at the time, we just like, that's really cool. We can grow food off of what was waste or food off of trash. And but I think, so Alex, when he was in college, started what still is today the largest organization on campus called the Sage Mentorship Project. It's a one-on-one mentorship project, and just had a big passion for like education and working with kids. And I'd spent 6 months the year before in Ghana and West Africa working on a sustainability recycling project. So we both like undergraduate business students, but had these kind of side passions for sustainability and education. I think something about that one sentence like got us both like, whoa, that's a cool way to maybe combine some of these passions and ended up reaching out.
Why do you care? Why go to Africa? Why not say, hey, you know what? I'm living in the land of opportunity right now. I'm in California where all these people are building empires. Why don't I just take this opportunity, build an empire? When I have money, then I'll go to Africa and help people. But until then, I better help myself. Why didn't you do that?
I think there's two things. I think one, being really fortunate, just the environment I've grown up in since a kid with a family and then college where you don't have to wait to make an impact. You can make a this as big of an impact with $1 as it can with $1 million. It's about like passion to bring into it, and feel lucky to have been brought up like that. And I think a lot of us learning. I learned so much like that. I mean, those 6 months for me abroad, I grew so much. I mean, you can look at it in terms of being selfless and selfish. In the selfless way, it's like, I want to get back. I can right now. From a selfish way too, like, you can grow a lot through experiences. I would not have been able to start this company if I didn't have that experience, you know, that
what helped shape me. I understand growing by taking an internship. I understand growing by getting a job, starting a company that fails, going to college, reading books. All those things make sense. Going and helping someone else, I don't get. Am I a jerk, by the way?
You're not.
I'm not.
You're asking the right questions.
Okay. So what did you learn by doing this stint over there?
Honestly, looking back, man, a big thing I learned was just the impact that one person can make. I mean, here I was at this 30,000-person school, the University of Lagone in Accra in Ghana, and helped set up what was a profitable recycling program for a campus that had no recycling. And, you know, I had a chance to, on the flip side, to have a ton of fun, travel, backpack West Africa. But at the same time, it's like just having one idea, one mission while you're there, you can make an impact in not that much time, in 6 months. And it was a cool feeling leaving there and being like, I left something tangible behind.
I get that. I had an internship. The only impact I had was I got to print out the labels that the stockbroker I worked for would put on the letters soliciting business. Yeah, that's not the same kind of impact. All right, I get how now it gives you a sense of accomplishment, how you can see that an idea that you have can actually help other people and come to life. You then get this mushroom business idea. You don't know how to grow mushrooms. You don't come from a farming background. And so you go to YouTube.
We could.
And yeah, that's how YouTube. You learned.
Wikipedia and YouTube. you can imagine the, half the crap you find on there too. Googling on YouTube how to grow mushrooms. I mean, there's a ton of hilarious videos out there too. But we started sorting through them. And I ended up like through videos and just reading articles online. And that's the cool thing. You can give yourself, like in this day and age, your own education just online for free. You know, we didn't take mycology classes and have a 4-year degree in, you know, agriculture. We just went online, started learning, and eventually traced that one fact to this book. This mycologist named Paul Stamets had written in 1994, I think it was, and traced that back to him, reached out to him, and just started building upon that. But step one was YouTube.
Wow. You and I met, we were introduced by Sam Parr here, just a few blocks from my office, who, and when we talked, I asked you about how you got this idea out there. And you told me about buckets, that you used to take buckets to your first customers, but buckets are also where you initially experimented.
Yeah, so our first, you know, when we first had this idea, we met up, so for, it must have been a couple of weeks, just like bouncing ideas back and forth. Eventually, right before spring break of our last semester, we were like, what the heck, let's just give this thing a shot, let's try it out. And got some mushroom spawn of the seed donated to us by Paul Stamets, this expert mushroom farmer. Went to local Pete's Coffee, his cafe shop here in California, and just started, we were like, hey, can we have your coffee grounds? And I remember going into that actually pretty nervous. We're like, are they going to give it to us or not? And they were so excited. Like, please take this stuff from us. You know, it's like this messy, muddy. We don't want to deal with it. So I had coffee grounds of that. Planted these 10 paint buckets, like Ace Hardware paint buckets of mushrooms in Alex's paternity kitchen closet. And left, not really knowing what we're doing still. We come back from spring break, and Alex was the first one back to his fraternity, and he just calls me up, and I still remember, like, he was so excited. Like, you got to run up here right now. You won't believe it. One of these things actually has these little baby mushrooms growing out of them, and out of those 10 buckets, one actually was growing something, and that was the first time I remember he was like, hey, you trying these? Like, I'm not trying these. You trying them? I'm not trying these. Like, we had no, didn't know if they're good or bad, and that one bucket, we walked over to Chez Panisse, this restaurant in Berkeley. Chef Alice Waters there is kind of one of the founders of this space, and she happened to be there and got her head. She had to try them out, and she was like, these are actually really good. And that was our first kind of little confidence booster.
It's kind of cool. You go to her restaurant, and she's there like the greeter. You know, she's not sitting in the back room, not working the area like a celebrity. She's there and approachable. But why didn't the other 9 work? You read the YouTube. You put it in coffee. Where are we going wrong?
We went wrong for the next 2 years trying to get that one bucket to go on a bigger scale. I think looking back, we thought about this a ton too. And I think part one is just an example of persistence. If we had planted one bucket, we probably would never be here today. That one bucket I wouldn't have grown because there were so many factors we didn't even know about that at the time.
What are some factors?
Moisture level, humidity, the amount of light they were exposed to, how sterile the substrate was, how much the spawn we mixed into there, all these different factors that at that point was, I mean, we did a couple of weeks of YouTube videos. We're not experts furthest thing from it. And one of them grew. Looking back, we were so fortunate because that gave us the confidence. But I think it's just a lesson in persistence. Like if we had planned a one and called it a day, we wouldn't be here today. So we took that lesson with us a lot. And it's like you got to vet things out properly if you want to try it.
You know what? I have to keep remembering that. Sometimes I will have someone teach me something, or I'll watch a video online or read an article online that teaches me how to do something. I try it and it doesn't work. And I go, damn, it doesn't work. I'm done. They lied to me. And yeah. Maybe I should try it 1, 2, 5 more times, maybe 10 times the way that you did. Yeah. You walk into Alice Waters' restaurant. Are you doing it because you want to sell her mushrooms to cook with?
At that point, we never actually sold mushrooms to restaurants. I think at that point, it's more like do these taste good? We needed that validation.
Okay.
And our first question, what's the best restaurant in town? Let's start from if we can get that person to like it, we know we're onto something. And we're like, well, Chez Panisse is 5 blocks away from Berkeley. Let's walk it over there. So that's kind of where we started off with. Let's just get the best chef we know of.
Just validation.
Validation, yep.
When she greeted me, I went to her restaurant with my wife and her mom, and when she greeted us, I didn't know who she was. They did. Once I knew who she was, I was a little intimidated because, yeah. I don't know, because she's a celebrity. I wasn't walking in with a bucket of mushrooms. You're walking in with a bucket of mushrooms. Do you feel intimidated? Do you feel like, what am I doing here? I went to college.
Yeah, I think we were so, I think ignorance is bliss. I think at that time we did not know. We were so not pleased, didn't even know what that meant, like Chez Panisse and who she represented at that time. So, and I think too, was something to this day I still feel is the power of partnership. Like I think when Alex and I are together, we feel like we can do anything. It just is when the two of you, you can just help bring that energy out more, and we just have that confidence together. So, kind of like it's the worst that can happen.
I see. Kind of like when you're in high school and you're with a buddy, you egg each other on and you can go and right? You can egg cars or do other things. When you have a partner, you egg each other on. Let's go in there to Chez Panisse. All right. So she's liking it. You're not really trying to sell her buckets. You're just getting the okay. The first sale came from Whole Foods, the local Berkeley location. You walked in there at that point with a box, nice packaging. What did you walk in there with?
It started off with actually that same bucket of mushrooms that same day, actually. Same day, same bucket. So, which is why we were so nervous because we had this one bucket, you know, maybe like this kind of big size crop of mushrooms. She and her head chef harvested half of them. So we were like, oh, like shit, if she doesn't like them, we just lost half of all we got, you know? So luckily she liked them. So now we have same bucket, half as many mushrooms, and started walking around different grocery stores. And that same, like driving around trying to see if anyone's interested in actually buying them now, and went to Andronico's, Berkeley Bowl, Safeway, as you can name it, and eventually went to the Berkeley Whole Foods, and they were the one company / people. When we walked into the Berkeley Whole Foods, one of the first guys we saw in the produce department, someone packing the vegetables, and we're just like, hey, we're trying to grow mushrooms on coffee grounds, what do you think? And he ended up, still my assessor, an awesome guy, and he got the whole produce team and marketing team, and he's like, must be 8 people huddled around this one bucket, and they were like, oh my god, it's the coolest thing we've seen. If you guys figure that out, you know, let us know, and we'll introduce you to our regional buyer, and he's the one who first connected us to our actual buyer who's still there today, but started the same bucket.
So, let's take a step away from the mushrooms now, because one of the things, we're living here in San Francisco, people are getting rich left and right. They are inventing the future left and right. Cars that drive themselves, apps that will share your secrets with other people and take photos that look old. It's very easy to compare whatever you're creating, whatever software you're creating, to them and say, this isn't as good. It's not revolutionary. Now, when you walk a step or two or as many as you have away from tech, don't you feel any insecurity? I know I sometimes do. Don't you feel like, well, I'm not working on anything as important as them. I'm working on a bucket.
Yeah, it's been, I think our mindset and our vision's grown with the company. I think we started off, we weren't in this space. We weren't entrepreneurs. We didn't really, you know, we were both going down the whole corporate. I was going to consulting. I was going to invest in banking. Like that was our path of success and et cetera. And so I think we were both fascinated by this idea of like, this is a really, like, food off of waste can be a massive idea. Like, food's the most personal. I think what we got like, kind of more excited about was, like, at the end of the day, like, nothing's more personal and important than the food you put in your body every single day. And I think we felt the, like, passion for what this could scale up to be and had some early validation, to be honest with you, too. I mean, we were 4 or 5 months in, maybe, still barely going to figure out how to grow mushrooms, and the BBC named the company with the top 3 social ventures in the world. And we were my grandparents in a small little village in, you know, in India, how we're watching our company on BBC. And it was like, so I think we knew like that this concept had the potential to inspire a lot of people to kind of rethink food. And I think from day one, it wasn't just mushrooms and coffee grounds, like something bigger. And I think that's why we called our company Back to Their Roots too. We never called it like X, Y, and Z Mushroom Farm. I think we knew like this is our start, but there's something more to this whole movement.
I see. And that's one of the things that I've learned from you before and that I've noticed in other people, but really wasn't as aware of until I talked to you. People who build things worthwhile don't just talk about the one thing that they have in front of them, the mushroom. They talk about the bigger vision, the bigger mission. And at the top of the interview, I said anyone who watches this interview and focuses on the mushrooms is going to miss what's special about you and what you really did. When I asked you how you sold buckets in private, I asked you how you sold mushrooms that were in buckets to Whole Foods. You said by focusing on the why. So what was at this point the why?
When we first got started?
When you were just getting started, what was your why? What was your sense of mission? The word why comes from Simon Sinek's book and TED presentation where he says people who have why create excellent products that other people want to be associated with. People who just have products have bland results.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. Our first website, we had no clue we were doing stuff. First website was a picture of this beautiful beach with pristine environment. And our whole vision and mission at that point, just like we're trying to make the world a better place through business than what we're doing. We believe in like the power at that very, very early stage. We didn't really know where we were going with this, but we knew like what this represented. This picture, this beautiful picture of nature is what this company represented, trying to make the world a better place than what we're doing. And early on, it was like sustainability, reusing waste was our why. And I think we've grown since then from just focused on reducing waste to the importance of food, and our why has shifted a little bit, but it's always, I think early on, just like you can reduce millions of pounds of waste in our community and do something productive with it. That was cool to us.
I see. So right there, it wasn't as developed as it is today. Today, where is it? If I were to ask you, Nick Hill, what is the why? What is your purpose?
Yeah, I think today our purpose is it's helping people figure out where their food comes from. That's our number one. Our question, our mission is, where does your food come from? And we want to create products and everything we do that helps people answer that question. And we think there's nothing more important than that. Talk about health and so many things. If people knew where their food came from, it's crazy how big of an impact that can have and how little we know about it. Like it blows my mind. So I eat bread every day. I have no idea how bread is made. That blows my mind, you know? And I think it's so important.
When you talked to Whole Foods, were you going to sell them buckets of mushrooms that they could then resell to their customers, or were you selling them the mushrooms or a box like you showed me?
Early on, it was actually the fresh mushrooms. We had a 2,000 square foot warehouse, their first like commercial size place, and we were growing fresh mushrooms, and we packaged them up in 5-pound boxes, sell those to Whole Foods, and they would put them on the shelf as like loose wholesale mushrooms.
How long did it take you?
We graduated in May, spent October 9th was our first sale, October 9th of 2009 was our first, and that was like a 3-pound sale, and then we realized we had a long way to go from then too, so we didn't really kick into gear. 2010 was our first real like year.
From May to October, Whole Foods says yes, and they're waiting for their first supply. How do you keep them, sorry?
That's correct.
How do you keep them still interested? How do you keep them from saying, you know what, those guys must have been flakes. We get lots of people who want to sell stuff. They can't all do it. We're moving on.
Yeah. I think a lot of communication, and it goes back to that why. I think we found our buyer was as excited about the vision of this company as he was about the product. And I think that's something that we've been so grateful for since day one. And I think that allowed him to stay with us we spent 6 months just literally knee-deep in coffee grounds. We'd collect thousands of pounds of coffee grounds, plant them, try to harvest them. Nothing would grow. We'd probably filled up early on every dumpster, compost bin in the East Bay, because we had no clue what we were doing. We couldn't grow anything. But through that, we kept them in communication a ton and focused on the why. Like, once we figure this out, we can do this, you know? So.
And people came into your warehouse, and they started to see this, and they wanted to take bags home. And this created an awareness, an epiphany maybe. Maybe epiphany is too big a word. But what happened what did you realize when they said that?
Yeah, one thing we've been since day one, it's really open and transparent, and did tons of tours of our production and farming facility, warehouse. And as people kept on coming, we would grow the fresh mushrooms, these big 3-pound almost like basketball-sized bags of fungus, like clear bags of fungus. And we incubated for 3 weeks, and the last week you slit them open and in 10 days get mushrooms out of it. But at that time we were harvesting and selling loose wholesale to Whole Foods, and people would come by our facility and they would take the whole tour. At the end of it, they were like, "Whoa, it's kind of cool. Can I take one of these bags home with me and grow them myself?" And we heard enough of these questions. We finally were like, people are more excited about trying to grow these themselves than they actually care about trying the fresh mushrooms, and the experience seemed to matter more to them. And that's where we got inspired. They're like, "Hey, what if we sell this as a mushroom kit?" And when the first one we took to Randy, our Whole Foods buyer, it was literally a basketball clear, you know, plastic bag of fungus. And we're like, we slapped a sticker on from FedEx. We went to Randy, like, we had this whole meeting with the fresh mushrooms. At the end of the meeting, we were super excited, pulled this bag out, like, it's kind of big surprise and aha moment, pull it out right in front of him, and he just almost falls out of his chair. He's like, "That's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life. No one's putting a bag of fungus in the kitchen windowsill." And I'll never forget that face of his. And luckily he was supportive enough to give us another shot. He's like, "Go back to your R&D team and figure it out." And at that time, it was Alex and I working at a Pete's Coffee, you know? But that was the start of the mushroom kit.
So you and your R&D team, which is basically you and your co-founder, right, at that point?
Yep, me and Alex, yeah.
How did you and Alex come up with, I'm looking now at an early version of the product, it looks just as good as it does today, to me anyway. How did you end up with this box that's just so elegant that will grow mushrooms in such a way that you almost want to display the mushrooms?
Yes, I mean, our first, shrinking the big farmer's market, big basketball size down to a smaller bag, still a clear bag of fungus, took that to farmer's markets, started selling them, you know, and realized that, we took that back to our buyer. It's this constant, like, iterative process, and he was like, "That's still disgusting." The second time was like, he was like, "The shape's much better. You guys got to be able to hide this thing a little better. You can't, I don't want to look at a whole bag of fungus. I want to see the mushrooms coming out of it." It was awesome feedback, and wrapped our heads around that. And our first box, it was funny, we're still on probably version 4 of our box, and our first box is Alex and I on PowerPoint, and we were at that point so invested in the why, because I think we still weren't confident in our product, that we literally had this essays on every side of this box. Like, it, looking back, it was like size 5 font, you know, and now we're just like, I can't believe he printed these boxes out, but it was just, you know, like the whole thing was just like,
because you were so eager for people to understand the mission, to look mission beyond the box, beyond the fungus, beyond what was in their stomach, and understand the mission.
Totally. And I think at that point, we didn't do it right. We missed the boat. We were too far on that side and not knowing what is this thing first. You know, people had no clue what this little box was in stores. And constant evolution trying to find that balance. So,
I asked you before when we were at that event, the Bootstrap event that Sam Parr set me up with. I said, I was preparing for our interview and I didn't understand what the actual product was at first because you were so why-oriented. And you said that there's a lot of refining in the product and the messaging, etc. And that always makes me wonder, how do you do it? Online, I could just say this and as soon as I post it, people will tweet their feedback to me. They'll email me. They'll comment at me. They'll see me as I walk down the hall here and say, "By the way, you shouldn't have asked Nick Hill this. You should have asked that. Here's the issue that I'd like to solve through these interviews. Help," whatever.
Yeah.
How do you get that kind of feedback when you don't, when you're not online, when you're removed almost from your customer because your product is in a store?
A lot of it, and it's kind of how we built this company, is in-store demos. We've been through, Alex and I have been at literally almost every single Whole Foods nationwide. Their leadership, Whole Foods leadership, jokes around saying we visited more stores than they have, because we literally built this company off of just in day after day demos, and you learn, we've learned so much from our customers from day, you know, just you spend saving that 7 hours on a floor, you're talking to hundreds of people, and you hear it all. You hear, "That's disgusting. I'm never going to put that on there." And you can ask them, like, "Wait, what about that's disgusting? Are you, you know, you're trying out so many different pitches and just how you're saying things." So our first 2 years that we kind of grew the company from just one or two stores in NorCal to a national launch, I think we were able to refine our messaging and our vision enough to be able to simplify it to something that now we can sell in Nordstrom's, you know, Home Depot, and other kind of accounts that you normally wouldn't expect a mushroom kit to be in. So
there's also something else where you found a way to incentivize people to contact you after they bought. What was that?
Yeah. So the mushroom kit is a really cool campaign. We still do it. It's a one-for-one campaign. So anyone who posts a photo of their fully grown mushroom kit on our Facebook page, we actually donate a kit to an elementary school classroom of choice. So it's been a huge just win for us in terms of just getting people to share their own photos online, which drives so much virality. and it connects deeply to our mission of getting kids excited about growing food. So that was really, and then we just, with the Aqua Farm, launched a campaign recently, partnered up with a company called Revolution Foods, really cool company in Oakland, where for everyone who bought an Aqua Farm, they could log online and vote for school to get a healthy serving of veggies donated to them. So just kind of incentivize people, not on like, oh, get 10% off if you do this. It's like trying to, going back to the why, of like, we felt we got so much more traction when we focused the incentive to engage with this on the mission versus it's a tangible like feature or reward.
One of your early websites was built on something called Nonprofit Soapbox. Were you planning on being a nonprofit?
No, we a friend of ours, Ryan, was running that and gave us a nonprofit discount. So we were jumped all over that for a while and just moved out of it. But I think since day one, we've really felt passionate about running a profitable business. And we still, you know, we've something we're proud about is running, you know, a profitable business. We haven't raised any outside kind of venture funding. It's been all debt, which has basically forced you to be profitable if you're trying to get that, you know, year after year debt. So, but I think we just believe that you can, it's funny too, because this quote we always talk about, and Google obviously is something we look up to, that Google, everyone does. Google is an amazing company, but they have this, their mission was to make money and don't do evil. And something about that for us is sounds like a cop out. Like, why? Like, you're just like setting the bar so low, like, don't do evil. And I think there's like another generation of entrepreneurs coming in, like, no, you can make money like and do good at the same time. Like, don't stop not doing evil. And we believe that in our heart, you can, you know.
Mixer G's motto is make money and stop tripping little old ladies. We're working on it. Something we aspire to. You know, you're right. When you put it that way, just don't do evil is not enough. Let's see where else. Even though you're on the web here, the first customers came to you offline. You going into Whole Foods, you going into local retailers?
Yep. So actually, farmers markets was the number one thing. Just out there demoing in farmers markets.
You standing in farmers markets and just selling it, explaining it, evangelizing it.
Absolutely. Yep. So we had, and I think early on was probably the most like, we were just two of them. We had a couple of interns with us just early on. We were just harvesting. Our schedule early on was collecting the coffee grounds, planting them, harvesting them, and then spending the evenings and weekends in stores, our farmers markets, just demoing them and learning. And got so much feedback and that early buzz too, the early kind of support of people who were telling their friends. So.
No, I'm looking at your personality here. You clearly have a busy office right now, things going on, but you're happy. I'm pushing you sometimes because I like to do that, and you're fine. You're not like embarrassed, upset, any of it. You're telling me stories about how you stood at Whole Foods, and frankly, being an hour in there as a customer is too much. You spent a day there. You were at farmers market talking to people. Were you always this kind of person who was personal, who was happy having conversations with people, even if they aspired to stop tripping old ladies?
No, I've learned so much. Public speaking and these kind of like demoing stuff was so not my strength starting off. And I think it's kind of fire by trial kind of learning where, you know, you realize that if you want to make it and do this thing, we got to get out there and start talking to people. And demos is something now I feel it's like second nature to me. You can throw us in a store and not feel awkward about stopping anyone walking by. And if they say headphones on, walking right past you, step in front of them, you know, and try to stop them. But
so just did you do anything that helped you learn to talk about this, that helped you learn to present well?
You know, so much of it, I think, was like over the forcing function of having to do it got us so much better. Because I think personality is all this, it's a fear mentally. Like once you realize this, once you get over it, it's like, well, that wasn't that big of a deal after I did that. And you do it a week in a row of demoing every single day, you quickly realize like, I don't have to feel awkward stopping people from doing what they're doing, you know? Like, especially I think when you have something, you personally, like, we're so proud about our products and what we've created. Like, there's a pride there, and we're not afraid of showing it off. Like, we know if we stop somebody in a store, we're not going to waste their time. Like, I think, even if they don't buy the product, I think 10 seconds explain this product to them, they'll be like, well, that's kind of cool. I'm glad at least I saw that. And I think it goes back to, like, making sure that we always have to be really passionate, like, are we still all in on this mission, this purpose, and our product? Because the moment that dips a little bit, I think everyone else sees that, you know? But I think if you have that, like, deep, deep passion for what you're doing, it gives you the confidence to stop anybody because you want to share it.
So was there a moment where you worried? If all we do is we tell a story about a happy-go-lucky guy who everything worked out because he had the guts, I don't think we're telling a full story here. when were you nervous? When did you feel like this thing wasn't going to work out or you weren't right for it?
I think the biggest time when we were the closest, like the hardest time was we had beyond the first 6 months of not being able to grow anything. And I look back to that, that was purely our partnership of Alex and I that got us through that. We, that something there to bounce it off of. There's no way any of us by ourselves could have done that. So but I think even after growing the business, we're at the point where we were growing the fresh mushrooms and we had just come out with the kits. And for a while, we're doing both of them. We're doing the mushrooms and the kits. And none of them, neither of them were selling very well. And we were both, looking back now, we're kind of half-assing both of them. Didn't really know how to do a branded CPG mushroom kit. Weren't the best mushroom farmers. And there was so many, I mean, there was probably it was a four or five-month stretch of us trying to do both of them. And I mean, we've been really fortunate to have some amazing mentors along the way. And you can imagine some people who we respect so much telling us, you know, oh, do not do the kits. That's the most terrible idea. Guess scale up the mushrooms and create this massive mushroom farm. And every city should have a mushroom farm. And vice versa. And we were sitting there, like, barely any revenue, just hanging by a couple of grants we had luckily won. We got a 50K grant to the Hitachi Foundation that was, you know, we're hanging on, like, penny by penny. And had to make this decision of finally giving up the fresh mushrooms to just focus on mushroom kits. And we just spent, you know, whole beginning of the company, right? That was our baby, figuring out how to grow fresh mushrooms. And all of a sudden, we're shutting down this 2,000 square foot facility we'd spent, I can't, how many weekends and hours hammering up walls and all this kind of stuff. Just that uncertainty, it was crazy. I can't look back to it still. It was probably the hardest
I can
time.
See the pain in your eye, even as you're talking about it. And the reason that you knew that it was the right decision is because the fresh mushrooms weren't bringing in a lot of money, but you believed in the possibility of this thing that hadn't yet shown any of its possibility.
Yeah,
really.
We were still in a couple stores, but I think just realized we started figuring out our strengths. Like, we're gonna spend 20 years and trying to build this mushroom farm and still be like a 5 mile radius mushroom farm selling in NorCal. Like, we think we're pretty good at like getting people excited about something. We're like, it goes back to impact. You asked this question earlier, like, you know, people building self-driving cars, like, we want to do something that impacts people and leaves a legacy. And we're like, same amount of time, if we can create a product that's in every single kitchen across the country, that to us is more exciting than busting something we weren't good at that in 20 years is going to still only affect X population, you know? So it was tough. I think it felt right.
I've decided in the interviews to stop actually showing the websites, mostly because I think anyone who wants to can go to the sites themselves. And usually there's not much to see. But in this interview, anyone who's listening this far should just go to backtotheroots.com and take a look at what the mushroom kit looks like when it's fully, is it called flourishing, budding?
Yeah, flushing.
Flushing?
Yeah, it's like one flush or growing. It's common.
Boy,
yeah.
Even like all the terminology around this isn't even very pretty. It's a good thing you guys have good designers. Like flushing. That's what I do with the toilet, tough. Not food. But it right. Looks great. Let's continue then. You're in one store. You've changed your mission. I mean, excuse me, you changed the product, but not the mission. The mission just keeps growing. It's time to go into other stores. How do you do it?
Yeah, so, you know, our big transition was kind of just like stepping back like year over year. Like, we had 2010, 2011, 2012, and 2013, or 4 years in business. And 2010 was all about scaling up fresh mushrooms. We had just how to take that one bucket and do it at a commercial scale, eventually get up to hundreds of pounds a week. And then 2011 was this transition of like create the mushroom kit, farmers markets, Whole Foods here and there. But then 2012, which you're kind of talking about, this big transition year for us of going from just the natural food space, Whole Foods, and asking ourselves, like, can we sell this thing beyond, you know, Nordstrom, Home Depot, things like that. And some of them Nordstrom, we met the buyers, Safeway at trade shows, just out and, you know, demoing our products at different events and, you know, event trade shows. But some of them were just kind of hustling. Like Home Depot, we actually went to the local store, asked them for the name of our buyer, the regional buyer for all of California garden stores in Home Depot. And he kind of gave us his name and we were like, it's either first name dot first name underscore last name. Sent like 10 emails out. One of them responded to, and he's like, "I'm in San Diego. Can you meet me?" A day later, we're getting coffee with him, and kicked off an awesome still relationship, which we're
back. So you just flew out the next day,
as if we were there. Oh, absolutely, San Diego, no problem. We'll be tomorrow. But that's still it's a huge. We were in about 300 stores. And expanding to a much larger launch this spring and working on a national rollout now at Home Depot for this Q4. So it's started off with a cold email, but it's growing. It's been really fun.
What percentage of your sales come from online versus in retail stores?
About 30% online, but that's including that are like Amazon, our website.
I see.
Kind of other online retailers. So Uncommon Goods is another big one for us.
What do you say to someone who's such a big buyer, who everything we hear about the big box stores is that they're not letting people get away with anything because they're so knowledgeable, because they're so price dependent, because they're so experienced. How do you convince someone with all that experience to buy from you, to be a good partner? What do you say?
Yeah, I think actually big box is moving in a different, the other way, to be frank. I think with the rise of Amazon and e-commerce, if you want to buy something just transactionally, you can do that in a click of a button now online. So I think those stores like Whole Foods and Nordstrom are, they're looking for products and companies that can bring back that experience in a brick and mortar. And I think it's a huge debate, like what's the future of retail stores, you know, for the online e-commerce. And I think what they're turning into are places more for discovery, education, experiences. You look at Whole Foods now, and you know, top retailers in the country, they're killing it because of their focus on that, and everyone's trying to copy them in the grocery space. And so I think for us, it goes back to like our story, the why, the purpose, the experience of it, you know. And the last part of it about it is like, oh, you get a pound and a half of mushrooms. Like, that's the last thing we focus on with our buyers too. It's like having them buy into our vision, because that's, I think, what they're looking to share with their customers right now, to differentiate what they're offering. So I think it's been a cool, interesting kind of, even the last few years, we've seen that just, you know, with the rise of Amazon.
And I can see how that would help you get into schools. Am I understanding this right? Are you guys in some kind of partnerships in schools or somewhere, somehow allowing students to sell this? What's the deal with schools? I see it all over your Facebook page and your site.
So schools, probably stuff you see on Facebook, is people who've posted photos will donate a curriculum and kit to that elementary school teacher, you know, whoever the address they send to us. And then we've dabbled, haven't really diven deep into like school fundraising, but it's something we're still exploring and excited about. We've done a few schools, which raised quite a bit of money, a few thousand dollars, because, you know, for like, you're sending kids out there selling, you know, Snickers bars to their friends and teachers, which to us is like, just doesn't make any sense. Like, the most unhealthy thing for kids, making them evangelists. Like, why not give something fun, educational? So we started working on a fundraising program, and then just do a lot of classroom visits. Like, our team every month is going out to classrooms and doing workshops, like hands-on sustainability workshops, and just getting out there. So it's more, I think it's where our passion is a company, and the only, I think, most tangible way is in that one-for-one program.
All right. And then you got into aqua farms, right? What is an aqua farm?
An aqua farm is a little 3-gallon fish tank, and all the fish waste can actually be pumped up to fertilize your plants, and the plants in turn are constantly breaking that down and cleaning the water for your fish. So one of the most annoying things of having a fish tank is constantly to change your water every week or two. And this whole science is based off of aquaponics, which is a really cool kind of cutting edge way of growing food. And we fell in love with it and started kind of thinking, like, how can we shrink this down to something at home? And so you can go like fresh basil or herbs up top in your fish tank and keep a betta fish or any kind of small fish underneath. It's a really cool little symbiotic system.
Let me see if I understand this. The fish is in water. Mm-hmm. The fish goes to the bathroom.
Yep.
This tube picks up his waste or her waste and feeds that to the plants that are on top. I then chop the basil off and put it in my food.
Absolutely. Yep. It's delicious.
And is that waste enough? These are tiny fish.
Oh, it's unreal. I have this massive, like, I've had one on my apartment now since the launch date, and huge crop of basil on top of this thing. Like, every weekend I'm plucking some for sandwich or an omelet, and one betta fish in there. It's unreal. And for us, it's like the coolest. Talk about with aquaponics, is just such a fascinating technology. It uses 90% less water than traditional farming. So you talk about this California drought, like, there's starting to be so many aquaponics farms popping up, and within 10 years, it's going to go from this crazy out there norm to, you're going to see so many farms servicing a lot of the food you buy in groceries, aquaponics, and really kind of really, really cool way of growing food. And we visited a farm about a year and a half ago, just totally fell in love with it. We took a tour, like, this is the coolest way of growing food we've seen, and asked around to see it through the home size version of it. And the smallest thing was like $400, just like 5-foot wide thing, and we're like, it's not a home size version. And decide to see if we launch one.
That's it. Do I have to water my plants?
So you feed your fish, but you don't have to do anything else. The water is constantly cycling through. So the tank water is kind of going up to the plants, watering the plants, fertilizing them, and there's no soil is all grown entirely off of rock, so all the nutrients are coming just from the water. It's pretty cool.
So I just have to feed the fish. I don't have to clean the tank. I don't have to water the plants. I don't have to know. Like, I can go away for vacation. As long as someone feeds the fish, we're good.
Feed the fish or get them out. I went to, I was out for 2 weeks by the automatic feeder. So if you want to get really hands off, you could do that.
That's it. So you guys selling an automatic feeder?
We just linked to it on Amazon. It's not our own designed one.
I see. What YouTube channel did you watch to learn how to do this?
This wasn't a YouTube channel. This was, we kind of learned a lesson from the mushroom kit. After visiting that farm, we're not going through that process again of million iterations. So we actually found a really cool design company called Daylight Designs, an industrial design firm in San Francisco. Just awesome people. Linked up with them, got some like aquaponics experts to kind of help. And but pretty much like, we don't know the answer, but let's get some experts in the room to do. And
so you just had this vision. You or Alex had a vision that said, fish waste, good fertilizer, we create this ecosystem, bim, bam, boom, we save the world.
Well, it's already been out there. We saw it on a big scale. And I think our vision was like, we did it with a mushroom kit, like taking this big mushroom farm, shrinking it down to a tabletop experience. And we're like, can we do that for aquaponics? So aquaponics has been out there. It's actually the Mayans used to do this stuff. And it's kind of been a resurgence recently. And I see them all over the place here.
So when I see an aquaponics ad, or store with the big aquaponics on, they have the fish in their water supply also?
You've seen the aquaponics store?
I see them all over here. I go run into work, I see a couple.
You've probably seen hydroponics, maybe. So hydroponics, there's a lot of hydroponics stores, which is just soilless growing. So that's, you're just growing off of water, but you still have to add like chemical nutrients for the plants to grow. And then aquaponics, which is much newer, and I want to see aquaponics out there where you are adding chemical nutrients, fertilizers. The fish waste is that. So it's really sustainable. And on a big farm, they're actually harvesting the fish, like tilapia or catfish, and some of the fresh produce. So you get two food sources out of the same area.
I see. So you just have seen this by caring more about the environment, by being more curious than I am. And then you said, how do we break this down and make it small enough that people can put on their desk?
Yeah, like, how do we bring this aquaponics to go from this hippie super niche thing that like we fell in love with it. We gotta meet some more people, and that was a challenge.
All right, I can see
how you bring design and ease of use to aquaponics so every house can do it.
I can see our connection is starting to get a little bit fuzzy. First of all, I freaking love this. I love my personal focus. I'm obsessed with doing these interviews. I'm obsessed with finding out like other entrepreneur stories. I'm obsessed with talking to my audience about the issues that they have and then bring them back in interviews. And I love seeing someone else with a similar obsession. Like, it just creates this passionate work environment, this mission-driven life, and it creates products that other people never would have dreamed of before. Hopefully, the part that I care about is finding out the perfect question, the perfect story arc, and so on. I notice the same thing in you here, and I don't mean to put myself down and say I admire how you do it and I don't do it. I admire how you do it because I feel like there's a connection there. This is the kind of story that I admire and I'm proud to bring out to my audience. Are you as happy as you seem you are? Or am I just perpetuating this like this lie, this entrepreneurial myth?
No, I'm having a blast. I'm really grateful for it. So we have an awesome team. You can hear us all around here.
Everyone's I can hear it.
It's just a good vibe, man. And we've had people ask, like, what's like success in your mind? There's this quote that stuck with me, my personal motto: like, do what you love with people you love. Like, that's success. If you can say every day you did that, like, and I think I'm
do what you love with people you love, that's success. All right, I'm gonna leave it right here. April Dykman in the pre-interview said to you, actually, what books do you recommend? You said The Alchemist, Dr. Seuss for Childlike Creativity, and Steve Jobs Bio. I'm surprised you didn't say Simon Sinek's. Why?
I haven't read his book, actually. I've only seen his TED Talk, so I have to check it out.
All right. I think if you saw his TED Talk, you got the heart of the book. It's such a good TED Talk, and it's so exciting to see what you've done with that idea. The business and the website, actually, the business is Back to the Roots. If you want to see everything we've talked about, go to backtotheroots.com. One last question. $3.3 million in sales last year. What kind of profit can you do on that?
Solid profit. I want to take you up on answering that question exactly,
but
we We felt.
Are you taking
really
a salary?
We are taking a salary.
You are. You're each taking salaries.
Each taking a salary.
And the business is profitable, even though you have no outside funding. It's self-sustaining. Profitable and self-sustaining, both true?
Both. We do have so we've gotten loans and a credit line from our bank, but because our hardest financial hit is we have 60% of our sales up to 65 in the Q4, most of which was in 30 days, Thanksgiving to Christmas. So this huge ramp up period, we need cash just to finance inventory and everything comes with that. So we have been really fortunate that some banks can help us through the summer lull and then hopefully kick us the fourth quarter to pay it all back.
What a great success story. Thank you for being here and telling and sharing your story with us. Thank you all for being a part of it. Give me your feedback. Let me know what you guys think. If you watch this all the way through, I'm especially curious about your feedback. I know I'm going to get feedback from everyone, but it's the people who got all the way to the end that I'm especially excited about. Nikhil, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye, guys.
It's a blast, man.
It's been great.